We're going to get going to the second part here, and I want to make a slight revision. I want to have just a quicker breakout session for this first one. I wrote the two questions at the back of the room, and if you could think of some ideas to put on either one, you could focus on one or do both. Let's spend the next 5 minutes, get some ideas on our sticky notes, and then we'll go into the next phase, and then we will return to that one to talk about the results after we talk about the program.
So what do you want on the sticky notes?
And so those two questions we've got, so the top 3 to 5 materials you recommend the county target for increased diversion over the next 10 years. And so, you know, think about things like what you saw in the waste characterization study. Think about problems you just see because you, you know, live here, those sort of things. And then the other question is the top 3 to 5 programs or strategies you recommend that the county implement to maximize feasible diversion of the materials identified. So,
how long are we taking to do this?
5 minutes.
Oh, that's fast.
Cool. Not your only chance, so don't worry.
Thanks for waiting my anxiety.
I know, people are getting...
And you know what? You can keep writing the whole meeting if you want.
That's true.
You'll just have to hear talking.
Either write big categories or all the subcategories, right?
Correct.
But you have to read the
word. And it doesn't have to be in a specific category of the study. Let's think beyond that. So if you think there's a major problem with pallets and you want to write that down, that's great.
While we were sitting here at a... Well, I'll share it after.
You can talk. This can be an interactive moment.
I got
moment.
Way too much to write.
You get the extra small stickers.
And then we can just go put them up there while we're...
Yes.
Please.
Okay, get it started.
Yeah.
With you.
Lyle, do you want some sticky notes?
Allison should have mine.
Okay.
She knows my priorities. So just for knowledge, general knowledge, the sludge project also hopefully will include food waste at the same time.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Because we have that much capacity anyway.
So
the problematic thing is the producible waste attracts birds. So I'm going to have to build a huge warehouse to house operation, but I cannot build that huge warehouse because of the safety, the DOD airport safety plan.
Okay. Sounds like an easy.
Yeah. Well, sorry, food waste numbers are really low because of big farmers. Who we like?
Yeah, I believe the study. I don't know where it is. Allison explained to me that most of our food waste goes to big farmers.
Yeah, right.
But as I noticing, especially on the west side, those farms are diminishing.
Yeah.
So we're going to get to a point of no return where we're going to have to take action.
So what's happening, there's small farmers and then there's haulers that are hooking up with them. This is all very informal. So there is still a fair amount of
assume he's going to say farmers, but like Wells said, big farmers are dropping out. So it could be a problem. Is that a trend that you've seen?
Just started. That one of the biggest farmers decided to stop.
Did they share with you why? No.
I think their problem is how to meet the sanitary requirements of the Department of Health.
Yes.
And we have one of our office people. Okay. Thank you for doing that. That's some good starting of our thinking. What I'd like to do is we're going to, Elizabeth is going to be talking about the next section, and that is a little bit more detail about the existing programs and facilities that are going on in the county right now. And hopefully, you know, after we do that, we'll get another chance to return to these to think about if you want to make some changes to the ideas that you have. Maybe you have something that needs to be refined a little bit, or maybe there's some new ideas that come to you based on that. So we're going to be going through a variety of the topics. These are basically, in order to do the requirements of the state for the plan, there needs to be a program element and a facilities capacity and siting element. And so we will be going through the major facilities and the major programs that are currently happening in the county, talking a little bit about some of the items that are already happening for recycling and source reduction and bioconversion, things like that. So hopefully that additional information will help inform some of the thoughts that are getting generated in the back of the room. So, Elizabeth?
Yes. And to give all of you enough time to expand upon your wonderful ideas, I'm going to kind of go through this quickly. There's a lot of information in these slides, which is partially meant to be a resource that you can return to as we go through this meeting and future meetings, just to put a really good foundation in place of what we're working with currently. If you do have any questions, would like a little more information on any of these topics, or have something to add, please feel free to stop me. Speak up if I don't see you right away. but yeah, I'll be going kind of quickly. So starting off with the county's solid waste collection. The county is responsible for residential collection for at the curbside from municipal solid waste. And most of this is automated collection. There's a little bit of manual refuse collection where needed based on the location. New since the 2010 plan is the county's pay-as-you-throw program. So the idea here is that cost more to get a bigger can, to get multiple cans, so that people will consider if they can recycle or put into practice source reduction principles and reduce the amount that they're putting in their can for curbside collection. Commercial refuse collection is available through the county and also through private haulers. This slide, oh, sorry.
Can we pause there?
Yes, absolutely. Right.
Pay-as-you-throw program, really awesome. Is it really awesome?
Yeah.
I asked because from the perspective of trying to create some kind of like business around helping residents to reduce waste, it's challenging. There's no cost savings that I can offer them really, because they got to get their volume down a ton to save $8 a month, whereas the services I would provide them would cost more than $8 a month. So.
Yeah, so when we went out to get those fees in place, the rates, they were much higher, but, you know, through the legislative process, they were reduced. So, you know, hopefully at some point we would be able to change the rates, especially if we added other services to the program, we would change the rates accordingly. It just has to do with the legislative process, who's on council and what their agenda is. If they want to add fees or not. But we know that the cost of collecting curbside is around $60 a month or more. So
wow.
This is significantly less than what's
subsidized.
Yes. You know, so that's the argument, though. Hey, Public Works, we're paying you taxes. Do it for us. Why should we pay more? So, you know, there's that argument going on, and that's why the rates are low.
There also was a study done on the pay-as-you-throw program with some phasing available for the future, but it requires some pretty big infrastructure, like a materials recovery facility and curbside collection of recyclables, to really bump up to that next phase that would allow some of that additional diversion incentive.
Yeah, looking at just trying to do marketing for like a small-scale business startup, you have to approach residents and say, it's not going to save you any money, but it will, you'll be doing something green if you put your food waste in this bucket on the side. You know, it's not gonna, I can't offer them savings, financial savings. So it's just a challenging market.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point to bring up as we think about what we could do that would increase diversion and increase source reduction. Financial incentives are always a driver. Yeah. More discussion
on
this
one? Good? Yes? Offer, I think that the delta that exists on page zero is a critical element as well, so just reinforcing that.
Excellent. All right. This slide just gives an overview of the coverage of Kauai's waste, solid waste facilities that are in place here. So big ones like the landfill, Kuhi Metals, which has a lot of the recycling and programs, and then also some of the green waste diversion sites, the transfer stations, the redemption centers. This gives a location, kind of where everything is spread out. Okay, give everyone a chance to connect this a little bit before I go on to describe what you should do. Yeah, so the Ke Kaha landfill is where, you know, most of the MSW goes. It's or where all the MSW goes and most of the waste is collected. It's owned and operated by the county. And prior to December of this year, Waste Management Hawaii did the operations and monitoring services for the landfill. So the landfill does accept self-haul MSW, green waste, and recyclable materials from residents, as well as the county's collection of curbside MSW, and private haulers and commercial vehicles can pay a tip fee to take their MSW there as well. We've already had some discussion about the remaining life of this site and potential or other siting efforts in progress. So for the refuse transfer stations, there's four of those located on the island, Kona Lake, Kapa'a, Lahui, and Kona Pepe. These also accept MSW green waste and recyclable commodities from residents free of charge and commercial for a tip fee. Some of the recyclable materials here include tires and motor oil and filters and scrap metal, appliances and propane tanks. So a lot of really good programs for residents to be able to bring their materials to keep them out of the landfill if they don't really belong there.
Except, I believe everybody pays for the transfer stations through their property tax.
Oh, yes. That's a good point.
And also the base fee for our pay-as-you-throw system is $6 a month for every dwelling, and that is part of the transfer station, because it's part of the whole system. So that's what we tell customers when they're like, what's the space fee? I'm not getting curbside collection. Well, that helps pay for the transfer station.
Yeah. Is there a large portion of residents who don't get curbside?
About 8% opt out.
So the pay-as-you-throw is $6 a month on top of what comes out of property tax? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's, did I say $8 a month? It's $6, $6 a month base, and then it's $4 a month to have the 64-gallon cart, so that's 10 total, or $12 a month to have the 96-gallon cart, which is 18 total, on top of property tax. And collected by property tax, but shown as a separate line item on that bill.
I don't fully understand subsidies, but I imagine that it costs more than $6 a month per household.
Yeah, $60 a month.
$60?
Yeah, for us to do collection. Yeah.
To do collection. That's the cost.
That was what it was calculated when we did our study. Yeah, per household per month. So it's probably more now. That was the study several years ago.
So instead of raising property taxes, the company at the time chose to do these alternate fees for direct use.
And then are you guys
so in no way covers the cost. Right? So right now, general fund covers 50% of the entire operation cost.
I think it's more than that now, but it's more like 60%. Yeah. So our fees are collected through from the tip fees from the landfill and the refuse collection.
Seems like the biggest thing we have to do is just show the cost of the consumer. 60% is
yep.
Funded.
Yes.
I mean, people just think it's free to throw shit away. It's like...
It's totally all in things that they don't think.
All
agree. Yeah. And it's interesting coming. I lived in San Diego before Oahu, and it was, if you wanted to throw your couch away, you had to think about it. Maybe it was $100 to take it to the landfill, and your couch only cost $100 in the first place. So then you're really looking at, like, all right, you're on Craigslist, and see who can take that. So it is an incentive financially to not bring stuff there.
Right.
Here, it's like you could just endlessly bring your.
That's a challenge too, because I think you start jacking up these people, dump it wherever, and that's a problem, obviously. As well.
Yeah, illegal dumping is definitely an argument against having fees, but usually what's illegally dumped are things like couches. But other than regular municipal trash, they tend to kind of dump that. That doesn't really happen. But it's definitely an argument that's been used against having fees.
And just kind of identifying the story is like, don't want to charge consumer or residents too much for the services, but want you to operate off the budget, the general fund, and then but it's not a ton of money, so you gotta be really tight.
And that is what me as the administrator have to deal with when it comes to budget. Because I have 6 divisions that I gotta balance. That's why until we pass the GED surcharge, I had only $1 million a year to pay roads. Now I have 15. So we can really make that way now. But if we just started, the money just started flowing, so it's not, I cannot do it overnight. And we eating that elephant one by the other time.
So since we're on the subject of the cost per household, does the county have studies on what it costs per ton to actually put it in the landfill? We know you guys pay a waste manager, whatever the guy's about, 90 something bucks a ton, whatever it is.
100.
But as far as all the costs, so from the development to the maintenance, the legacy items, to recycling the new landfill, what is that total cost per ton?
Several years ago, our former chief did do a study, but that was a long time ago. It was like 2009 or 10. So we don't have any recent data. That's how we came up. It was 12. Because we came up with the tip fee that was kind of in the range. So we thought it was about $120 a ton all in. But we do need to work on that. Pretty high level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
Lyle.
Yep. I would be here. It's no more than 100.
It is. So it is.
I would venture to say it's probably closer to 300.
Exactly. So that's why Allison says we subsidizing with general fund about 60% for all over the years.
Plus, if you build in the 30-year cost of the new landfill.
Yeah, it all depends on.
So that's where you can say, okay, if it's costing the county and taxpayers $350 a ton to put in the landfill, where is it beneficial for us to use some of these funds to buy more to recycle? So that's a big part of the equation that we have to look at. So you got environmental, you got financial.
So we do have those budgets. A large part of what we divert is green waste. And it's in the corner over there, I was discussing that our green waste diversion cost is over $2 million a year. My number is out there.
Well, you know, it's about $1 million in the fees that we pay to the processor,
yeah,
but we have internal costs.
Our own
right?
costs. Yeah.
We have equipment and labor. But it's still less than one.
With the increased population from the time that you did that study, it seems like some things become cheaper when there are more. But it seems in this case, the county actually is losing more money because of the increase in population of numbers of households using
the trash system. Yeah. We need to relook at all of that.
So the challenge is the political process.
Yeah.
That when we go across the street to raise rates, I mean, it took me 4 years to get the GE excise tax 0.5% passed. Every year we go and take cracks, and finally last July they passed it in 2018, and I got my first half year's work in January 19, and then this year is the full first year, and we're just doing amazing things out there with paving roads, but everybody wants their road paved now. So we try to strategize moving across the island and service all the different parts of the island as fast as we can. So that's the same issue here that I was saying. That we went across with what we felt were the rates that would get us ahead, and then, you know, experienced that for a few years. But they pretty much sliced us by 30%.
They did, yeah, it was a big cut. And then sometimes, I mean, in the past administration, sometimes the hardest part is convincing the mayor. You know, we'll see with this mayor, but, you know, mayors don't want to raise rates either. So it's just a very challenging.
Yeah, and I don't want to get stuck on Square because you've got a whole presentation to get through. It's just pretty critical. It's something I heard from a co-worker of yours last meeting. Was if it's not under $120 a ton, we're gonna let the, you know, we're talking about who is the other solid waste?
Rick. Oh, Rick.
Yeah. Rick.
He said that's something we consider when we're looking at programs.
Right.
That's not.
If it costs more than $120 a ton, it's like then we're just gonna let the. But it's hard. It's tricky because if the cost of landfilling is more.
Yeah.
It's just a hidden cost.
Yeah.
Yeah, there will be sections on the plan system cost analysis that looks at this from an overall perspective, and it does lay out what's coming from the general fund, what's coming from the TIP fees, what's coming from the pay-as-you-throw, and so that will become a little bit more evident, as well as a facility section that will look at future projected tonnages that will need to go to the landfill based on population and what the capacities are, the current facilities, and then some kind of information as well about cost of expansion and future potential there.
So I apologize for that to step out early, but I guess I want to just leave on the note of, to me, it is a huge opportunity to understand how important it is to communicate what we don't even understand right now, which is what these costs actually are. Like we're sitting here, we're supposed to be the people who know, and we don't know what the costs actually are. I know that there's been estimates, but I think that information is really powerful, not only for council and not only in a complex report, but if we can visualize it in a simple format, and if there's 50 or 100 residents that learn it, they become the biggest advocates we could possibly have for moving the needle on this. I mean, this is, you know, this it should, like, I think we can successfully visualize the data and say, hey, here's the reality. Here's some infographics that show this is what we're paying. And you think we're paying this, but we're actually paying this, and it's being subsidized through taxes. And here's what happens if we do it differently. So, you know, with the data, just really get people to buy in. Because the lack of buy-in is not because council doesn't want to raise taxes. It's because people feel like we're being inefficient and we're not using the money. And if they understand, hey, this is how the money's being spent, it's that much easier.
Yeah.
So apologies for having to step out.
Excellent. Thank you for your participation.
Okay.
Yes. All right. All right, you talked a little bit about transfer stations. Moving along to the Kauai Resource Center. This is owned and operated by the county. It's located here in the city, and it serves a number of functions. It's got some office spaces for county staff, a High Five Redemption Center, an education center. The county runs a number of programs out of this space, education programs and drop and swap programs for residents, and recycling programs for residents. Also, the home composting bins are available there. There are some new programs in the works to facilitate reuse of material that doesn't sell at thrift stores and transfer that over to Oahu to have another life. And there's also some additional space available at that facility, and the county is still working on partnering with other organizations to find programs that fit in that space. So there's additional opportunities there.
I think that's missing the point of the resource center. At least from my understanding, it was built following the Iniki hurricane, paid for by FEMA to be an actual resource center where you had, you could bring your whatever you had that you're calling trash for somebody else could use, and that the glass lady was the last one that it only lasted 2 years.
It was longer, but so I'll explain. Yes, it was originally built by EPA as a reuse facility, designed as a reuse facility. The county and economic development had bid it out as a reuse facility several times and were unsuccessful. So then I got hired to try to get the center working in whatever capacity it could. So what I did was did bid it out as reuse, and we didn't get any takers. So then I split up the facility with different activities so that it could be met, that use could be maximized. The good news is that we are going back to the drawing board with the reuse, and we're working on a program that's going to divert textiles. I remember that textiles was a big number on our chart, and we have a lot of textiles that are just going to reuse facilities now, and they're throwing them away. And so we have learned that Art of Hawaii can distribute that either on Oahu or throughout the world. And so I'm proud that we're able to do some reuse there. But you're right, and originally it was reuse, but we just couldn't make it.
But so, and then that last bullet on the bottom, the partnership between the county. This is the program Allison is talking about with ARC. And so through that, hopefully it'll be a lot more like the original intent, because there are opportunities to take, those sorts of materials and reuse them and get them into an area that's not even that far away from going there. So.
I think it's good to keep that in mind, that if you go to California right now, every town and city is having its own resource center now. They're just starting this, and we've had it since Iniki. I listened to one of those webinars about resource centers, and they used us as an example of a resource center that wasn't given enough time to work. So I think that needs to be kept in mind that it apparently takes 10 to 20 years for one of those to actually catch on, to the public to catch on to using it. So my hope is that it will, seeing it as a resource, as a national resource, where you can take your demolition debris and somebody else will use it, kind of thing.
But I'm really happy we can use this space for all the things we've been doing, because composting is a really beneficial program for the island, and we've been able to store and distribute out of there.
Yes.
And do the battery recycling and have office space and all of that.
Yeah. I don't want to sound as if I'm saying you're not doing a good job, because I know you are. I just don't want people to not see the vision of what that is meant to be.
So going along with that, with reuse and source reduction, and this is really any program or action that can reduce the amount of waste before it even enters the waste stream. So taking materials and preventing them from either being downcycled to a different kind of material through recycling, or from being disposed of and not even entering the collection system. So a lot of source reduction efforts are currently in progress. The county has agencies have a bunch to reduce paper usage, which we've seen is a huge issue for the landfill, paper, as well as residential and community efforts, like thrift stores and food waste going to pig farms and drop and swap programs, nonprofit donation centers. The county has a lot of public education initiatives also to try to increase awareness about source reduction and also provide some technical guidance, especially on things like food waste. There's really good information available from the county for for troubleshooting once you get your food in, I've seen online. In terms of, and also providing the free home composting bins. Business assistance is available through the recycling office, and there's also ordinance in place, like the plastic bag ban and pay-as-you-throw ordinance, that attempts to legislate some of the source reduction. And then we talked about the new program already.
Yes, sir.
So this is the number one thing to focus on. If we can keep waste from going in the waste stream at all, that's best, and second best, recycling. So in order to have a successful recycling program, there are some infrastructure needs, which is what this slide covers. It's large indoor warehouse, baler, conveyor system, loading docks, equipment, and having a facility located close to the port is ideal. It's what Garden Isle has now, and it's what connects up the gathering of the recycling material to actually being able to process them and send them someplace to ensure that they are recycled. In terms of recycling programs the county currently has going on, the Kauai Recycled Residential Drop Bins are a huge one. There are 8 locations throughout Kauai that residents can come and bring their mixed paper, their cardboard, their plastics. There's been a little bit of a change, I think, over time in terms of what plastics are accepted, so there's a lot of good signage available at these residential drop-ins to help residents understand what they can take there now, and there are some who are wishing that they could still take some items that they used to be able to take, but people are understanding what goes in there, which is good. Commercial recycling drops is available at Garden Isle Disposal. There's also Hi-Fi Beverage Container Redemption Centers available that allow residents to get back their 5-cent deposits for specified types of glass, bimetal, aluminum, and plastic containers. So it's a much smaller subset of materials. And scrap metal is also accepted at all of the transfer stations. There's a lot of good places where people take their recyclable materials. The county also has the Kauai Recycling Guide, which is a really comprehensive informational pamphlet available that describes all these programs. It's got some great charts in there about exactly which materials can go to which locations. Pretty detailed breakdown of materials as well. So the idea being residents can sit at home and look at what they've got and look at where they can take it and connect it all up. The county also provides education to businesses and interfaces with the tourist industry. Like we saw earlier in the slide, there's a significant number of visitors to the island, and so the materials that they generate, recyclables and MSW, are also a large component of the waste stream. The county also offers grant programs for certain recycling activities, and Allison mentioned earlier the opportunity for schools to potentially get in on the same.
So that's for next fiscal. So every year we're doing different things.
Okay, so rotating tasks and grant programs, good. Which can be really helpful to get people off the ground and get recycling programs started if one person's really passionate about it but maybe can't generate momentum in their organization themselves. Touched a little bit on county ordinances that promote reuse and recycling, the pay-as-you-throw program, the plastic bag ban requiring businesses to provide recyclable paper bags or reusable bags instead of single-use plastic, as well as the very successful commercial restrictions at landfill program, which has significantly reduced the amount of cardboard, green waste, scrap metal that are being disposed of in commercial loads. So that's been a great success in terms of overall diversion.
Yeah, and so as we were talking about materials and strategies and programs, I think it's important to keep in mind some of the things that have already been rolled out here and what have been effective here. I know there has been some discussion about maybe having a styrofoam ban, possibly some sort of organic ban, whether it's just all organics or food waste focused. We did talk a little bit about the possibility of starting with like a commercial organics ban and phasing it into residential. There was a little, some thought about maybe banning C&D from landfills. So think about those kinds of things. You already have an ordinance that restricts certain commercially generated materials. Could you apply that same line of thinking to other things? Has that been effective? Is there problems with it? If you, from your point of view, those sorts of things are helpful.
Thank you. There's also bioconversion programs in place. Residents can dispose of their source-separated green waste at the four transfer stations at the landfill. Commercially generated green waste is subject to a small tip fee, and then this green waste is shredded into a mulch product that can be used as ground cover or as a base for compost. And free mulch is available to residents then, so they can recover some of what they...
Who provides the free mulch?
Just Hanukkah Bay Transfer Station.
No, but who's generating?
It's Shredco. Yeah, so they shred on site there, and then a certain amount is left for the public.
Is all that being utilized going out to the public, or is?
I don't have a pulse on that. I know that it's all getting composted. Whether the public takes the majority of it or not.
Sure. There's always a big pile there.
Yeah, I just wonder if it actually gets...
I can follow up on that. How about that?
Gets used.
Yeah.
I would argue that it's being taken off site and deposited.
Yeah.
Composted. It's not really the right word. It's just being landed.
Land applied, that.
Yes. Being applied on a piece of land that does actually being serve any purpose.
Well,
some of it is. Some of it is.
The way our compost, our green waste diversion contracts work is they have to go to a state permitted facility. What happens to it at that point, it's up to the operator. So we don't have a spec in there that says, if it has to be turned into compost and sold at market, or if it can be landfilled, or what happens.
I just was just kind of sitting here. Be structured in a certain way, or the kind of structures in a certain way. What I'm really starting to look at is pristine and throwing mulch down or finished compost sequesters carbon, sucks a bunch of carbon out of the atmosphere and puts it back in the soil. So if down the line, the state of Hawaii starts looking at having carbon, or we currently have carbon neutrality goals, I think 2050 is like carbon net neutral kind of thing. So land applying compost could be one technique we use to get we suck some carbon out of the air here in the state, and we get some good numbers, and for however much carbon we're emitting, we suck a bunch out and we get the carbon neutral. And so spreading mulch out on the ground actually does that. And I think UH has done some studies now to show it. So we can actually quantify it. We could do like a carbon sequestration program. That's something I'd like to see the county do. Or I'll do it.
Yeah. So maybe some possibility there for additional discussion.
Do you have one slide open?
Yes. And as discussed, the county offers free home composting bins, and as well as support for residents who are interested in home composting. All right, so in addition to the MSW, the green waste, the recyclables everyone's familiar with, there are also a number of special wastes that are hazardous and hard to manage, and these have their own programs for appropriate management disposal. So some of these are things like asbestos that goes to the landfill, agricultural waste, which are mostly managed at the generation site, infectious medical waste, which can be sterilized and taken to the landfill, incinerated or shipped off island for further processing, abandoned derelict vehicles. These are collected by the police department and taken to Food and Metals, and where their materials that can be pulled out and recycled and fluids are taken out, and then the shells are compressed and transported off island for recycling. So that's a really awesome program that Kauai has to keep those off the side of the road, and also keep some of those hazardous fluids and valuable metals that are in there from just being disposed of. We've talked a little bit about sewage sludge. Right now there's the possibility to send dewatered sludge to the landfill, but also programs in the works to divert that from the landfill, potentially potentially turn it into biosolids pellets and have another end use for that, which would be fantastic. White goods are accepted at the landfill and the transfer stations, including metals for recycling. Commercially generated white goods can be recycled for a fee. Scrap tires. Residential tires are also accepted by the county for recycling, and commercial tires are accepted for a fee. Motor oil is accepted at the transfer stations for recycling, as well as filters, and then containers for disposing of motor oil are also provided to residents. Batteries are a growing concern and problem, and so the county does accept lead acid household batteries during household hazardous waste collection events, and household batteries also at KRC for recycling. Auto parts stores will also accept batteries in trade if a new battery is purchased. So that's really good.
They just accept them for without any batteries.
Okay. Yeah. Pressurized tanks are a pretty significant issue. Some are accepted. Residentially generated propane tanks are available for free, and some commercially generated tanks are also available for a fee, but acetylene tanks are considered hazardous waste. They're incredibly expensive to dispose of, and there's a lot of dumping of those at the transfer stations or landfill, and they're not supposed to be entering the waste stream. They're supposed to be disposed of properly by the generator, and so this is an issue that needs further consideration.
We're working on a solution.
Oh, you are? Yeah, oh, that's because, very exciting.
It's a pain for everybody. Because they line up in all of our loft containers, we'll hide them, we dump our cans, and there's an incentive tank in there. So they pop up all the time with us, and the cost of it really is crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's so difficult to get rid of them. I think that's where we can talk about, you know, putting the responsibility back on the manufacturers.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it says air gas on it, it won't take it back. So, I take it back.
And
it's like $500 for us to get rid of it. But it's become such a problem. We've talked to a bunch of athletes, guys, so we've been trying to figure out a better procedure to handle it. They didn't hurt and then ship them off. Rather than trying to ship them all off as hazardous waste. So hopefully within the next couple of weeks, we've been working pretty hard on it.
All right. Great. Good news. So next meeting, you'll give us an update on
that. Can I comment on household batteries?
Yes.
Not from personal experience, and we all electronic devices out there nowadays. Just having one location for battery drop-off, like I don't think people from Princeville or Cape are coming down just to take their batteries in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I sometimes collect them, and then all of a sudden the whole thing's going off because of one bad battery. I'm like, well, screw this. I'm not going to trash.
So the issue is.
But could there be like locations at every transfer facility for something like that?
Yeah, permitting is the issue. Ideally, it would be a product that the retailers could take responsibility for in the past long. Send the batteries back. You know, Costco should be taking them back. That's a producer responsibility goal of mine because, you know, it is hard for the county to manage all these different streams at the transfer station to keep them all clean and, you know, keep up with our permits and not have any violations. And so if we could get the stores to take them back, that would be cool.
Sounds like there's a common theme there with somebody's going to sell something that causes them problems. Whether it's acetylene bottles with propane tanks or batteries or whatever, like, why not just put that on them and have them increase the cost by that much to, you know, if you want to buy batteries? And I'd rather pay for it that way than in my property tax.
And it was successful with the electronic waste law. I mean, we got some really good programs in place with the U.S. law, so that would be my goal.
Things would be easy up in years.
And I think it's kind of frontier, like cutting edge policy to try to put it back on the free.
Right, yeah. I know there's a whole host of challenges. Political at that point.
What else? I don't push the public. That's what says category one and two. With regard to, I guess, if you can be landfilled, are there any other restrictions or requirements that you may want to bring it in?
Empty bag to serve.
Yeah, it needs to be, you need to do a manifest and then.
Data restriction.
Yeah, there is also, a data restriction of how much we can take in. So we need to call and schedule ahead as well.
The issue is we have to manifest it and we have to identify where in the landfill it's located. So we need to map it, identify it, and there's a whole bunch of requirements for reporting.
So how far in advance do you schedule?
I don't know
that. A week is ideal. Because they got to trench, depending the volume, they got to trench special location. And
is there a volume that is mapped out for the neighborhood?
It's in the application form.
Okay. Now they're only taking like two loads a day or something.
Actually, right now we have a...
We have suspended right now because we're transitioning to the new cell. So we anticipate probably February or March when we open. Right now we suspend.
That's rare that we have that.
Yeah.
That's rare.
Where are you getting my car?
See ya.
Gotta go cancel that asbestos job.
All right, just a few more of these. Specialties. Use cooking oil. There's a company that collects this to turn it into biodiesel fuel for white grease traps. There's also instructions on the county's website for how residents can dispose of this in the curbside collection. C&D materials. Currently, a lot of C&D material is still going to the landfill for disposal, but PCCC does accept a lot of the concrete and asphalt and is able to divert a lot of that, a lot of what's generated on Hawaii. So there's opportunities there to come up with a solution to divert a lot of the other C&D material from landfill. Petroleum contaminated soil is accepted, it's tested at the landfill, and dead animals are also accepted at the landfill. So these are the categories of waste that need to be managed specifically. Additionally, household hazardous waste. The county has semi-annual two-day collection events for these, and also some really good flyers and information showing residents exactly what they can bring to these events and prevent them from disposing of small quantities of potentially hazardous stuff in the general MSW stream. A little bit of a challenge for this material because there aren't hazardous waste management facilities located in the county. It requires a permit to collect this stuff and store it and transport it. And so there are limited options. Residents have these semi-annual events, but if they move between events or need to dispose of something in between the events, there aren't a lot of options. And then commercial facilities have to come up with another way to dispose of their hazardous waste. And sometimes for small businesses, that's an issue as well. If facilities don't want to come to the island, collect a tiny bit of material, and then deal with all the hassle.
Before you switch here, I just wanted to point out too, these image-based signs are something that is new since the last plan, and the county's been putting a lot of time into this educational method so that, and it's not just with HHW, but all the different types. There's battery signs like that and some of the recycling signs, but the idea is that you don't really need to speak the language to know what a picture looks like, and a lot of times people get very confused, even if you are comfortable with recycling, and sometimes an image-based sign is actually more effective than word-based ones. So I think this is a great addition that county staff have implemented.
Yeah, that's a good point. If somebody doesn't understand if their material fits in the category, they probably just chuck it in the trash or just throw everything that they think could be plastic in the bin.
Wishful recycling.
Yes, optimistic. Okay, electronic waste. We talked a little bit briefly about the electronic waste and recycling recovery, TV recycling recovery law passed in 2010. This does require some manufacturer responsibility in manufacturers providing recycling options for these covered devices. There is an annual grant to run and promote the program, but it's kind of a limited number of materials that fall under this covered material, computers and printers and monitors and TVs, laptops. However, the county does offer a program for all types of e-waste to residents. So as you can see from this infographic on the right, there are many, many types of e-waste that are accepted at the county's e-waste recycling fence. And also at Boogie Metals, as well as businesses are also able to dispose of their e-waste at Boogie Metals free of charge. So this is one situation in which commercial sources are covered.
So if there's stuff that's not typical e-waste, that's like a specialty stuff that we might have to charge for, but it's been rare.
It's just really big stuff.
Hard to handle stuff. So it's mostly e-waste, but typically server cabinets and stuff like that. High recovery value, not a lot of disposal costs, a lot of times maybe people think that's not for me.
Okay.
But you could say case by case basis on commercial, I would say 95%.
Yeah, we will have some of that nuance in the actual text of the plan. So I do remember it from the website, and we will not send everyone to you. Boogie Metals, take all your things. Okay, and so kind of a program that touches everything else that we talked about is public education. It's, in addition to having the programs in place on the county side, it's ensuring that the community understands what the county has to offer, understands how to appropriately use it, that it's easy for them, that they're aware of what's available. And so the cornerstone of that is really the county's website, which has a lot of detailed information and things that residents can search on their own based on their interest level. But in addition to that, the engagement types that have a little bit more impact are direct engagement with residents and businesses. For instance, facility tours and public presentation, and then going to the county fair and setting up a booth and talking to people who come by, and offering things at the Kauai Resource Center, getting people in the door to interact with recycling staff and with the image-based signs and the programs, and not really waiting for them to search out full material on their own. Also part of that is radio and print media advertisements for people who aren't savvy online. So there's a component of those, as well as brochures and signs and stickers and printed material that residents can take home with them, put them near their cans, near their where they keep their recycling, understand what goes where, and have that to reference. Okay. And then another component that we've talked about a little bit that's really important here is what the existing markets are for some of the materials that are collected for recycling, and there have been some challenges we've talked about a little bit in terms of the commodity pricing for these materials. These markets are where the county has been sending these types of materials. The ones that are listed first are the most recent, and then you can kind of see over time if there's been a shift in where this material has been going, but the bottom line here is, like we've talked about, source reduction and local end-use markets, finding alternates to shipping these materials over to Asia where their pricing, their value is falling and it's a little bit more uncertain.
And this only shows like the general commodities that are being recycled. It does not include the metals that are coming to you, the white goods, the tires, the C&D, concrete, all that sort of stuff. So it's just sort of the basic items and their current markets. As we build on our materials and the strategies and programs, I want to hopefully, expand beyond that.
And also, this is where the public curiosity is right now. There's a lot of news media about these markets, negative media.
There's been a big shift in the markets, like metals now. The non-ferrous markets go kind of Asia. For the ferrous metals, you can, most of our stuff is going to go to India and Turkey. It's a China and India. All the Vietnam and all these guys are trying to get it.
Interesting.
I like the combination of China, California, Saudi Arabia.
I know. It's like, ooh, all of them.
So next up, we have these slides that we've already covered. Taking a more in-depth look at a couple of materials, but I think that brings us to our next breakout session.
Well, first, I wanted to see if there was any questions now that you've heard a little bit more about some of the programs and facilities. We talked a little bit about some of the bans and ordinances, things like that. So if you guys have any questions? Yes?
Is responsible? Do you have manpower to enforce the bans at the landfill? Is there ever a review of loads and what does that look like?
Yeah, so we do. The loads, when they're dropped, they are screened to make sure that they don't exceed the 10%. The good, or in any of the categories. The good thing is that the haulers, our largest haulers here at Garden Island Disposal, is very savvy about what can and can't go to landfill, and they educate their customers. At first, we did have a lot of non-compliance, and so I would work directly with the generators to make sure they understood the law, and so would GID, but now we just don't see a lot of that, right?
Well, we took a stance to tell them that they couldn't throw it in, period.
At all, yeah.
Because how do you judge 10%?
Right.
And our point back then, I was saying, well, all of my customers throw in 10%. When I take it to the landfill, I might get 10 or 11%. So my load gets rejected, and now it's my fault. So we just got our customers just banned. And there was a confusion because they would call the county, and the county would tell them it's 10%. But we said, yeah, the haulers have 10%. But I'm telling you, as a customer, you're not supposed to throw it. So our guys weren't expecting to see too much. They wanted to see the container there.
I've gotten a call from GID before. I was the trash guy on the job. And they said, hey, there's cardboard in your trash dump, so you got to get it out of there. That's good.
Just try to help with the ordinance.
Yeah. And now the message is that they are restricted. That's the message that when I talk to customers, it's restricted, just don't throw it in there. Get a program for that. Because the 10% was only meant to protect haulers, because they don't have direct control of their customers. It wasn't for customers directly. So had a little challenge at the beginning, but it's worked out well.
Cool. I know we could expect similar behavior if we did a new ban that initially would be challenging and people would be following it, and then hopefully with time and education it would change.
Could I ask about fixing producer responsibility? We were talking about it earlier. I'm just wondering, where does it come from? Is it a political thing? Is the county ban something? Or is it a thing by say Costco, would suddenly say, okay, if you want to send that stuff in here, you have to also receive it. Where does it, how does it happen?
It is a legislative issue, usually at the state level.
Yeah. So California has a lot of EPR that is mandated by the state right now. They're probably the furthest along, I'd say, in the U.S. There's parts of Canada, different provinces that have EPR that have been they're relatively successful. There's been some challenges, but typically it's at the state level.
But I think it's more necessary if you're an island out in the middle of the Pacific.
Right. Definitely.
Yes, but at the state level, it then becomes a political issue. Because Frank obviously is something that's true in this picture. So the most recent, I guess, example is our electronics ban
because it goes to the legislature and there are lobbyists protecting the electronic manufacturers industry. So it goes through that process and it gets modified, watered down, whatever you want to call it, right? So it's as opposed to you know, a perfect sort of situation. We can even look at the pay-as-you-throw, in a sense, of manufacturer responsibility. So the households are the generators in that sense. So that goes through the council process and gets watered down. There's the ideal level where it would have an effect of making households like really think about how much they care now, but when it gets brought down to sort of put it at the acceptable levels, that's like a big portion to keep in mind, I guess, when trying to implement any kind of PR.
You see this feasible? Why would you do
it? So another component for ETR, that's especially, I guess, applicable to us is sort of going to pitch here. When we look at it, like Lindsay mentioned, California does pretty much need the nation. I think the ETR sort of measures at the state level, but that's partially because, I mean, they have the will, but they also have the population, the markets, right? When they make a decision, they have the ability to actually move the markets, to actually force manufacturers to change their processes, right? Whereas we don't. So even Hawaii as a state, you know, it's a small part of sort of the national market, so if you look at it, television or anything.
But if we piggyback onto California, we would give them a cut.
Well, I mean, in the big picture, theoretically, yeah. I mean, we could add on, right, if we adopt something very similar, identical. But it's adding on, you know, to California's whatever, 30%. Our portion would be, you know, 0.25% to California's 30, whatever it is.
We might get more benefits than they would.
So, like, using the electronics program as an example, because there's manufacturer fees. So that program, manufacturers of computers, monitors, televisions that sell to Hawaii, they have to register and they have to pay a fee to us. But you know, just we know over time, you know, even not, I mean, it's few and far between, but we get contacted by manufacturers, very small manufacturers, sort of niche markets, and you know, if their sales to Hawaii are 100 units, at that point it's an economic decision on the manufacturer point where it's like, well, they're just not going to sell. Right? If the registration fee is $5,000, they're selling 100 units, the numbers just don't look out. So they'll just choose to stop selling. That's sort of like one facet.
So how do we deal with like the Amazon sales? Online sales?
The registration fee is just if they sell here. So it's not based on
if you're selling stuff to people in Hawaii,
yeah.
There's no way to control that, right? You know that he's selling.
Wait,
you can track Amazon sales or you can't?
No, we don't track Amazon, right? It'll be Sony or whatever it is, or a company in that company that's registered with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. So they buy it through Amazon, but it's a Sony. It's like, are we only able to kind of regulate eyes on brick and mortar stores, sales through brick and mortar stores? Are we able to keep our eyes on online sales?
Well, we don't directly track that.
Yeah.
but it's the universe is really, I mean, it's very small. Right? I mean, if you go to Walmart or Target or whatever, Costco, the number of manufacturers are literally handful. So, and like I mentioned, like the registration requirement for me is not based on the number of manufacturers. If they're selling at all.
And if they get
it
through the internet, then
we don't.
You wouldn't know that they hadn't registered.
Well, I guess, I mean, if there were like really small numbers of sales, yeah, that's possible. But computers, things, printers, monitors, printers, they have.
Okay, thank you so much. Thanks for staying. We're going to move into the last breakout session, and then we'll have a little more time if there's any other public comment, and we'll talk about the next meeting. But the next meeting is in January, and we'll be refining these options at that time. So I'm just going to go over some of the ideas that were generated in the brainstorm session. So for this question, the top 3 to 5 materials to recommend the county target for increased diversion over the next 10 years. So we've got clean wood waste and pallets, seems to be a common theme. Compostable paper, we've got a comment about stop recycling glass and use the money elsewhere. Green waste, food waste, cardboard, clean lumber, treated lumber, other wood waste, leaves and grass, prunings, trimmings, plastics, C&B, we have a vote for glass, compostable, non-coated cardboard, food, non-meats, packaged and unpackaged, all food, some furniture and mattresses, other C&B, post-consumer food waste and packaging, and another C&B. So there's a lot of C&B, I don't know if I said cardboard and paper waste. So there seems like there's a lot of wood waste comments up here, several C&D, some mixed thoughts about glass, and a little bit of paper and organic. So that seems pretty consistent to the waste characterization study. Now, what we didn't really talk about was whether we should focus on commercial or residential with these items. I know that some of the discussion that we've talked about, you know, potentially maybe banning C&D, that would start off obviously with commercial. If you did some sort of organics or food waste ban, probably same. A lot of places throughout the country have gone in that progression where they start with the largest generators and kind of phase in. That seems to be one of the more feasible and just workable methods of doing it. All right, so then the next question, the top 3 to 5 programs or strategies you recommend that the county implement to maximize these materials. So we've got a lot of different things here. We've got mixed paper from schools, C&D material ban from landfill, divert recycle export material, sludge composting, drywall composting, implement your recycling, residential, green waste, look at other islands, investigate separate plastics to H power, cost of service to curbside pickup, eliminate rural curbside after route analysis, mixed paper, food, green, cardboard, and curbside organics pickup for compost, reduce regulatory requirements for composting, create tiered requirements, and ban food waste over time. Pallet program, anaerobic digestion, large-scale composting, waste energy for all organics, paper, and C&D. Ramp up composting programs and facilities, commercial ban on food waste, huge focus on education, cultural shift, work with DOH to review and adjust regulations around composting food waste, create permits for paper, cardboard, pallet composting, expedite permitting, use non-agricultural compost generated for landfill cover, on-farm composting site that will be able to
Direct compostable waste, allow full cycle breakdown and immediate use in ag fields. Find ways to reduce waste volume with shredding, crushing, etc. Avoid shipping away waste like glass, plastics, etc. that could be landfilled locally. I think that I caught most things.
Did I miss anybody's ideas? So this interesting, I think we talk a lot about composting. There are a lot of different kinds of composting. I believe at the later this year there'll be 5 permitted facilities. There's currently 4. Is that correct, Allison?
Yes,
4. And there are 2 that are looking at potentially taking food. Somebody made a comment about changing the requirements and maybe having some tiered requirements. And that's interesting. I just participated in a study we did for Metro, actually. They're looking at changing their compost facility standards. And so we went out and we did case studies all over the country about different states and other jurisdictions that have tiered their regulations. And there is definitely many places that are moving towards that. So I can share that information with you.
I'd be really interested
in
that stuff as well. Excellent. Let's see. Some waste energy, anaerobic digestion kind of comments. But a lot of, actually, I didn't see a lot of focus on recycling things, more on trying to find better ways of actually processing them. So that's a nice theme to see. Now, after you have heard all of the program stuff, do you guys have anything we should add to this list, do you think?
Clarifying, because there was that whole vote for glass thing threw you off on the materials. I was not saying we recycle. I put that down. I'm not saying we recycle glass, but that could be used
alternatively. Gotcha.
Whether it's landfill cover or an aggregate.
Okay.
It was like 0.3% in the composition. It wasn't much, but I like looking at like local solutions, things we can do with materials on island.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because when we were looking at where the materials are going, there wasn't a whole lot staying here. There is opportunities for concrete and maybe some glass happening.
Yes, Chris? Because that's only what showed up in the study.
Correct.
When the study was done, I think we're doing a really good job of getting glass out of that stream. There's still a huge volume of glass we're not dealing with effectively, just because the value of recyclable glass is so low. So, yeah.
Same as glass opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. If it wasn't coming through commercial hauling or transfer stations to landfill, it's not here. So yeah, there's another way we can deal with the material that is being gathered for recycling or for some other purpose and can use an alternate end market.
So the issue with glass is for the landfill cover is the dust and safety for employees. This is the issue for backfilling compaction is the volume. It's not enough critical mass for a contractor to use it. So you got to use a homogeneous product. I cannot go sand to glass to soil, or 3C, whatever.
Right.
What it is, it's just not consistent volume. Because when you do the inspection, you need, like I said, a homogeneous material. And then the other issue with recycling with asphalt to pave roads. Also, every time you pave roads, you have to qualify a mix. The contractor needs to come to us and say, we're going to meet the state mix, or the county mix, and the federal mix, and you need a consistent product.
Right.
And again, there's not enough material available.
To get a
Kauai, as I mentioned, critical mass is our issue. We're generating these kinds of opportunities.
Right. So even though there's precedent other places where those sorts of reuse programs are successful, you're saying that the problem here is just the critical mass that we have and volume that's coming through to be able to get that consistent product.
Would there might be enough if we stopped recycling it?
No. Especially now that I'm peeing like 30, 40 rolls a year.
That's enough.
Any other thought?
We would have to recycle it to get it to there, just so you know. That's the only way it comes out of the waste stream.
Right, we'd still have to do it, it just instead of getting shipped off island.
Right.
And I've been across the country, I went to San Diego, and they say if they got a haul glass, even they have a problem. If they got a haul glass more than 25 miles, it's not worth it.
Right.
You bring up a good point, but a lot of this has to do with transportation costs. Because the collection use is one thing, but if it's collected in the wrong place, it has no further economic use because transportation costs and value.
Right. That's why backyard composting is the best
program. Backyard paving.
Yeah.
Backyard paving. So I'd like to open up the room if there's any other public comments or. I know we've had an opportunity to make some, but just.
I just want the public to know that we have literally hit the pavement and looked at multiple options, and ultimately we got to work on the economics because it costs money to do all of these programs, and with the political process, we can come up with all these great ideas. But we don't control the funding. The legislative process controls the funding.
Right.
And so, we keep coming up with all of these studies upon studies, and we end up getting nowhere because as pay as you throw, we're the first in the state. And, our rates were cut to the point where are we really making a difference?
They brought it down by 90%.
No, it was like a 30%. We were saying like $21 and $12, I think is what we made.
So is it always going to be subsidized?
No, not necessarily. So that's a political decision as well, because certain municipalities it's fully funded by the
user,
right? So
you were saying $60 a bin, $60 a month.
Yeah.
Per bin.
Yeah, that's what happens.
And then we were going to, but then...
No, so we didn't say that. We never said that. We said it would be subsidized,
okay.
But just not to the level that it is now.
Right.
But that's always an option. It's just a political decision.
Right. Did you have another?
I was wondering if some of the issues that we have, because we don't have the mass of people here, if we work with another county, if we work with Maui or Big Island, if that would make it... Or is the transportation
geographically
isolated?
Like we are all of the islands are connected through the Department of Health.
Right.
They pull us all together, and they help us with these programs. But we all stand alone because we're separated by the water, and to move things around is the most expensive. So GID, he laughed early. I'm sorry, but we... paying them now to take stuff versus they take it for free and they rely on a commodity market for them to make money.
I can tell you percent of our operation that transportation costs is by far our largest expense. It's crazy.
And for us to get stuff to each bar on the wall, it's that poly cost plus the regulatory requirements to ensure that we're not going to pollute the environment with anything dripping off containers or what have you. It's got to be totally sealed containers. And to get it to each part, there's no way to unload.
But unless
you have a moving bin.
Each part has to be to your permit.
And they're not supposed to take
what?
The county ordinance, the city county of Honolulu doesn't allow them to receive refuse from it already.
So they have a hard time meeting their tonnage requirement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's the
So there have been, I don't know if I would even call them discussions, but I think very informal, but along those lines, right? Because each party is there, it's on their capacity and everything. But the city and county's position, I think, also has been like, yes, the facility can handle the tonnage, but if they do take from another county, they would want that county to take the ash back, right? Because it's a liability, right? Should manage that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're essentially required to take the ash back.
The best we do statewide is to communicate with our counterparts on the other islands, so we're not reinventing wheels, that we're keeping in contact and supporting each other and learning from each other, you know, sharing ideas. And so that's the only benefit really that we can have statewide, especially the neighbor islands working together because they have unique challenges compared to the law.
Yeah, I would say that extends to all the Pacific Islands,
yeah,
because there are many islands that are, you know, looking into some really innovative things, and they all have the same isolation transportation issues, and so keeping up with things that are happening, like in Guam, for instance, is doing some pretty interesting things, and it's important to be watchful of that. So, our next meeting is going to be January 21st, and that topic for that one is the options, definition, and discussion. So, you know, we really just kind of scratched the surface here. I want to get some feedback from you all. You know, it sounds like there's some things that would be helpful for you to make some better decisions about some of these options. So off the top of your head, if there is something that you'd like to see, I know there was a comment about understanding the volumes. Maybe we need to get some more information about the costs. If there's anything else that you think of now or later, please do let us know.
Yeah, you can email me.
And we will be posting the next audio and the meeting summary shortly. And thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
There's a statewide compost working group.
Statewide compost.
I was just informed that.
Okay.
Playing a lot of rules.
Do you know them at all, or are we involved in
DOE is, but
I don't think DOE is. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's right, but I should check it out.